I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And a good Saturday afternoon. It's 12:06 and you're listening to Upstate Outdoors on 106.3 WORD. I'm Philip Gentry, and in the seat normally occupied by Tommy Springer is our guest host today, Mr. Dieter Melhorn.
Hey guys, how's it going?
So Dieter is Dieter's in the passenger seat today,
and
we've been talking for a couple of weeks and invited Dieter. If you're a fan of YouTube fishing, then Dieter is he's the Dar Sizzle of catfishing, basically.
Well, I don't have maybe I've got the legs of Dar Sizzle and the tan, but that's about it. It kind of stops at the feet, and that's. Everything else is a little bigger.
Well, but the fishing's just as good, right?
The hair's close to hers, though.
Yeah,
the hair's close.
So if you're a YouTube, and you know, there's a lot of folks who are going, you know, off the networks or whatever. Especially if they're into different kinds of fishing. You know, maybe I'm a big, I like crappie fishing. I'm big crappie fishing. And
Richard Gene, the fishing machine. You need to be on YouTube.
Go to YouTube. So we got Dieter Melhorn Fishing. .com, that's your website, but it's also Dieter Melhorn Fishing on YouTube.
Correct. It's Dieter Melhorn Fishing. You go to my website, and I got links to all the social media. It's the same thing on Facebook. I've got a fishing page on there. It's a little more up-to-date with stuff, just kind of a little more timely. But, yeah, all the actual fishing stories are on YouTube, and that's how I got into it. You talk about cord cutting. That's how I got into it originally. That was where kind of my inspiration. We got rid of the satellite and the cable, and we had one of those little, I don't even know what it's called.
The Roku.
Roku.
Yeah, a Roku.
Yeah. Wife hooked that up, and I learned how to stream from the computer to the TV, and I started seeing some buddies I knew from the tournament world and said, wow, I'm going to try this.
So. Now, it's not, your YouTube is not all catfishing, but it's pretty strong in the catfish world.
It's very strong in the catfish, because that's kind of where I started at. I'm outside the Charlotte area fishing Wiley stuff on the Catawba chain. I actually fish down here in the upstate, too, hitting Clark's Hill and those kind of places. The catfish stuff is easy for me to do because there's a lot of big ones and we got a lot of them local, but I also do a lot of striper fishing. I like doing some junk fishing for some sharks and other stuff down in saltwater.
Yeah. Yeah, we called you one time as our shark expert one weekend when you were down at Murder Beach down there catching sharks.
You had the real shark expert last week. Great guest there.
But
I like easy fish to catch. Anything I have to cast to like 400 or 500 times.
You just said it. That's the thing. I used to hate catching sharks when I was fishing for something else. Right. And then I'm like, so long as I'm catching what I intend to catch, I'm happy. And it's not hard to catch sharks. And I'm talking about big sharks, 4, 5, 6 feet.
Oh, yeah.
All you got to do is throw a big chunk of meat out there in a decent spot.
Yeah, it's very similar to catfish, fishing for catfish. I don't try to say that catching catfish is hard. They're relatively easy to catch and they're abundant. And it's the same thing with sharks. The biggest thing is they got a heck of a pull. I think it's just an apex predator thing for me. I like fishing for the biggest junk in the water.
There you go.
And you can get into some big sharks.
Well, and we just kind of give you a preview into the show. We got a great show on tap for you today. First segment's going to be the Upstate Outdoors blog, otherwise known as the Yoga Pants Diaries. I'll get into that later. Based on an article, it's kind of an opinion piece that was written in a Springfield, Missouri newspaper by a guy who, he got all kind of website clicks. He was suggesting that they ban bass boats from public waters in Missouri.
Yeah, and I read the article. He was the one that was saying it disrupted his peaceful, Yenville kind of place out there sitting on the water hearing bass boats go by. And I agree, there are times that bass boats can be somewhat, I'll be honest with you, I would rather have a bass boat come by me at 50 miles an hour on top of the water. They can come by me 3 feet away. There's virtually no wake off of them. Yep. They don't bother me. most part, I think they're pretty good drivers of boats, to be perfectly honest. I would much rather have that than some dude with a bunch of cans blaring, pulling some guy on a wakeboard, throwing off a 3-foot wake off the back of the boat. That's very disruptive. It's very unsafe, too, for casual boaters that are out there with their kids, that kind of thing. So, you know, speed limit, I don't know.
We can talk about that. Then we'll jump into Chris Wells. Speaking of bass fishing, Chris Wells, a bass chaplain, he's going to be the Bassmaster Elite Tournament Trails on the Mississippi River. And you're like, "Ooh, yeah, what part of Mississippi are they in?" Well, they're in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
The upper
part of the Mississippi River. So
Is that the section you can actually walk across and some of that stuff
up
there?
Yeah, yeah. It's not the mighty Mississippi up there. It's the cold Mississippi.
That's not a creek.
So then, and Dieter and I were talking a little bit about topics we wanted to talk about, and he said, "Hey, let's talk about bed fishing." Now, most people think about bed fishing as, well, I don't know what you think about, but I think about bass fishing, sight fishing for fish on the bed. And Dieter was saying, "Man, there's a big stew going on about catfishing."
I just put a video up last week about fishing for them. So, yeah, there's some good stuff to talk. I know it can be a controversial topic in the bass world, whether you're disrupting the bedding process, but we can go on about that for a long time.
Well, and you can talk about that, about fishing or hunting for anything during their spawn. I mean, that's when, you know, you're looking for the recruitment of that species so that you can have those to
catch.
Pretty
much everything we shoot, we do it when they're breeding.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you hunt, you know, you hunt ducks on their, well, they're not breeding, but they're migrating, you know, for ducks. But deer, yeah, during the rut, man. During the rut, that's when I want to go out and shoot does.
Prove how stupid animals get when it's that time.
There you go. Then second hour, Dieter's going to guest host for the Roadkill Cafe. Can you give us a little peek of what we're going to be eating today? Never before. I don't think Springer's ever had a shark recipe.
Really? Okay. That'll be different then, yes.
He's going to come back. I actually saw some of the social media, Facebook stuff. He's going to come back and probably eat reef donkey. I think that's what he was catching,
Very nice.
Amberjack.
Now, is he listening right now?
What time is it, Money Penny?
Is he out of bed
What
yet?
Time is it in Florida? Yeah, he's only 12 beers in. Yeah, he's probably still standing.
Okay. Well, I'm honored to be in your seat if you are listening here. So,
speaking of being honored, we're hoping we got one of the big names in the catfishing world, Zach Roy. Zach is a catfish guide. What is it? Blues Brothers Catfish Service?
Yep, down on Lake Gaston in that lower part of the eastern part of North Carolina. Yep, great fisherman. Caught a state record. Next day, caught another state record.
Yeah, that's right. Was it the next day or three days apart?
It was very close. It was within a...
He broke his own state record.
Exactly.
Three days later.
Yes, yep. They got great fish down there. It's a great fishery, and he's always on to good fish. And a matter of fact, I think I was texting with him when he was going back to release. I said, that record won't last long. Little did I know it was just going to be a few hours. So, yeah, great story.
And then a year later, a 9-year-old girl or something broke it, right?
It was a guy, and I think Zach's originally one was in the 90s, and then it was like maybe upper 90s, low 100s. This one jumped up, I think, to 117.
But somebody has broken his record since then.
Exactly, yeah, North Carolina's record. But it can get beat at any time, especially with part of Kerr Lake being in North Carolina. I think that is the only lake now that – there have been two 140-pound-plus fish caught out of in the country. So
we'll be hopefully we'll be talking to Zach if we can catch him during a break. And if not, anyway, we'll call down to whatever the fishing pier is down in Alabama where Springer's hanging out and see if we can wake him up.
And get the guy in the store to go run the phone out to him and tell him we want to talk to him.
Well, they don't actually have a phone, but they do have a Dixie cup on some kite string, so they'll run it out there and we'll let Springer weigh in from his vacation, and then we'll wrap up the show with the calendar of events. We got several of those to talk about. And then one of our favorite segments on the show, the parting shot, is a story about a woman who gets swallowed whole by a 23-foot snake.
Wow. I have got to do some Googling during one of the breaks.
Well, we're going to go to a commercial break now. When we come back, we'll jump into the Upstate Outdoors blog.
On 106.3 Word, the Upstate's talk station.
So I know we got a lot of listeners in the Greater Carolinas area today. A lot of folks, Dieter was like, hey, man, I'm going to be on the radio down there in Greenville. So a lot of Carolina boys listening via our website.
Yep.
And also, if you miss a show, you can go to 1063WRD.com and click over here and click over there and get to the blogs.
I listen to them driving down today.
Well, the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I'm still new at this radio lingo stuff. But speaking of blogs, you can go to 1063W. They've changed it. We stuck the radio word in there now because we got the radio.com. So it's 1063WRD.radio.com.
Google if you can't find it.
Yeah, just Google it. Do like everybody else.
WRD shows up real quick when you put in 1063. It flies right to the top, so it's easy to find.
And so if you look at blogs, I wrote the blog, The Yoga Pants Diaries, this week. You know why I call it that?
Probably because you're wearing yoga pants right now, and they're very nice.
Actually, you know, blogs, the only people who write blogs are outdoor writers, fishermen, and women with three kids, you know. So I figured usually to get in the mood, I'll pour myself a nice glass of Chablis and put on the yoga pants. And, you know, the words just flow.
Somehow those women, though, in yoga pants make a lot of money off those blogs.
I hadn't figured that out yet.
Yeah, there's a formula.
But mine for this week, talking about how to make boating safer. If you were on the Facebook page for Upstate Outdoors, you saw where we posted Larry Rotman's. He's a contributor to the Springfield, Missouri newspaper, the Springfield News Leader. Basically, he penned an opinion piece suggesting it was time to ban bass boats from public waters. Now, he's in Missouri, and I have to give him this. Lake of the Ozarks, is that a border lake in Missouri?
I am not real sure. I've got some friends out there that want me to come out there and fish, but I'm not sure.
They call
exactly
it the Ozark Lakes. Basically, Springfield, Missouri is the headquarters of Bass Pro Shops.
Yep.
Okay, a lot of lakes out there, a lot of folks who like to fish, and a lot of bass boat guys out there. I mean, let's face it, Bass Pro Shops owner Johnny Morse is he's also his affiliates own Ranger boats,
several boats,
Triton boats, yep. Stratus boats. Let's see, what's the one at the gosh, you're gonna kill me.
He's gobbled up a big percentage of the freshwater boat industry over the past
years. They got lead. So basically, you know, this guy writes this piece in the heart of bass country. He got a bunch of website clicks, and that's probably the reason for it. But after he said everything that he said, and he's talking about, you know, they're going 100 miles an hour to catch a 12-inch fish and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, a lot of rhetoric designed to incite folks probably to click and to respond and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you know, it's like I was saying at the beginning of the show, it can be annoying. I think there's a little bit of envy from some people, quite honestly, when they see some guy in a boat going really, really fast. Because, listen, everybody wants to go fast and have a big car. Not everybody's got one. So I think there's a little bit of that. Safety, I don't know, because I started to respond to that initial post when I saw it, and I couldn't really find the stats on it. But I'd be willing to bet there are more people injured in recreational ski boat, you know, cabin cruiser-type accidents than there are now in boat, you know, bass boat accidents. Now, granted, they happen. I mean, we all hear about
it. It seems
to
me like the bass boat, and I'm sure there are a bunch of them on, a fair number of them. Hopefully, there's not a bunch of them on Lake Wylie where, you know, the bass boats run full speed into a bridge. I mean, I can think of several of them that one of them happened down on Lake Greenwood in the middle of the night. And speed in and of itself in a bass boat is what hurts a lot of bass boaters themselves. Now, we had a fatality back about a month or so ago on Lake Hartwell where a guy basically got thrown out of his boat and he drowned. And we talked about that because he was not wearing a life jacket. Mm-hmm. And made the comparison about, okay, you're going to make boating safer. Wear a life jacket. You know, if you're out on the road, you got to wear a seatbelt. That's the law. But it is not the law in South Carolina, and help me out with North Carolina law, but you don't have to wear a life jacket unless you're under the age of 12 or you're operating a personal watercraft.
Right. And, you know, that's one thing with bass fishermen, especially these tournament fishermen. Most of those guys are required to wear a life jacket.
The tournament requirements, yeah.
And it has to be hooked up to a kill switch so that if they're thrown out of the boat going at a high speed, at least the motor's killed and the boat, you know, they've got something they can swim back to and the boat doesn't keep on going.
But it seems like a lot of the safety precautions are meant to protect the people who are driving the boat. But here's another thing that's overlooked. If you're over in South Carolina, if you're over the age of 16, you can go buy any boat and go operate it because there's no driver's license requirements. And for the majority of our lakes and big rivers, there's no cap on the size boat that you can put in there.
I remember when I bought my first boat years ago, and I think bought it at Bass Pro Shop, went in, you know, I'm talking to the guy, and we get all the paperwork done. I go, so what do I need to do to get, you know, a license or – He goes, oh, you're set, man. He said, you got your registration. I said, there's no
test training
I got to take or certificate. Oh, no, man, you're ready to go. You're dropping in the water. Take off. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And then as I got out there and started being around some of these yahoos in the summertime, I started going,
that's what they're doing.
They need it. They really need it. It's a wonder. And any of you guys out there that fish, especially if you do vent, most of us fishermen, there's a transition period right around May to where it's almost like the turning of the tides at the coast where the incoming meets the outgoing. And it kind of is the same with fishing. We tend to stay off the water. Maybe you fish about 10 or 11 because
I'm
going to
get out there and night fish or something.
You night fish or you get out there before daylight and you fish about 10 or 11 because it gets crazy. And it's a wonder not more people are killed. Bass fishermen, honestly, I'm not one of them, but they really don't worry me as much as all the other yahoos that are out there, you know, running around and how close they run to people. That scares me more. How do you regulate it? That's a tough
Well, and
thing.
That's a part of it. I mean, you know, if you're under the age of 16, they require you to take a safe boating course, and the rules and regulations are in that. But, you know, they just assume if you're over the age of 16, you're kind of grandfathered in. But, and we do this a lot on the station. You know, I think there needs to be some legislation, and I'm very rarely one to say, we need a law governing that. We need a law governing this. But I think with the population growing in the Carolinas and folks wanting to use our public resources, and, of course, they're wanting to go buy boats. I mean, boat sales are going back up with the economy turning around. And a lot of these folks are just like you said. They're like, hey, I bought a boat. Who can teach me how to use this
thing? Who can teach me to get it off the trailer?
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of that stuff going on. So I think people would benefit from that. They want that. And at some point, like you said, on a Saturday on Lake Kiwi, where everybody's running to and fro and don't know the rules because there's a book out there, but you're not required to read it.
Yeah. The bad thing is you have to unring the bell. There's so many boats out there. So many people have them, you know, and it's
can you imagine turning that around and say, hey, you got to have a license from now on.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to have a license, you got to have law enforcement to be out there to say, hey, where's
your
boating license?
Yeah. Then it's going to, you know, they're going to have to, you know, grandfather people in because you've been, hadn't killed anybody up to this point. So you're okay. But how do you prove that you,
man, I've been driving boats since I was 3 years old, whatever.
I think the one thing that came out of this is that guy did a very good job of getting a whole lot of traffic on that whole piece
I think
that
that's
he wrote.
What, that's
he did a phenomenal
about.
Job on
and,
doing that.
And the thing that surprised me about that, too, was they were talking about Missouri has a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit after dark. And I'm like, how do you enforce that? I mean, how do you – are you going to have DNR officers out there with radar guns at night? Sir, I caught you going 34 in a 30-mile-an-hour zone.
Yeah.
You know, the no-wake zone, I get it, but there's not even, quote, a speed limit in a no-wake zone. It's just by observation.
It's the slowest speed at which a boat can maintain steerage is how fast you can go. So if you got a 20-mile-an-hour crosswind, you can actually create a wake. What has California done? That's what we need to look at. They will guide us into the future in this.
They're going to ban boats, and everybody's going to have, you know, kayak or whatever. Yeah. So, well, let's go to our break, and when we come back, we're going to ring up the Bass Chaplain.
Yep, Chris Wells will be showing up on 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station.
Well, since Springer's on vacation this week, we got Dieter Mellhorn, a Carolina boy, The only he said the only Carolina is a blue Carolina?
I didn't say that. That was someone else in the studio that said that, our lovely producer over there. But I like all Carolinas, especially ones that pay me and there the line of work I do.
Awesome. Well, let's go to the phone lines and pick up the Bass Chaplain, Chris Wells. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Guys, I'm doing fantastic. It's been a hot day today in Wisconsin, which it didn't start off that way, but it's warmed up nicely.
Well, are they catching any fish out there on the mighty Mississippi? Is that what do they call it up there? Is it the mighty Mississippi or is it the mystic Mississippi?
They call it right now this week. They're calling the mystic Mississippi because it's been a ever changing mystery. Every day it gets different, and they've having some flood stage water come in. They had a lot of water up north, and that water's flowing into these pools that the bass guys are fishing, and it is changing every day. So the guys that are doing well are the guys that can move and adapt to the ever-changing conditions. We've even had some campgrounds have to evacuate because the water's coming up as we speak.
And so it's no mystery when things get tough and folks can't figure out how to catch fish that Aaron Martins would rise to the top of the leaderboard.
You know what, and you think that would be the case, but what has happened now, Aaron had found some fish that were out off a little point, a little more offshore fish, and he and Chris Zaldane were kind of swapping spots. But with that water moving higher and higher up into the bushes, what you would expect to happen in lacrosse is looks like it's happening, and that's the frog guys are really doing well, guys that can get way up into the cabbage and throw that frog. Right now, Jacob Prosnick is throwing a frog, and he has been literally smoking them. But, you know, we said this at the last tournament at Sabine. It's going to sound like a broken record, but as soon as you say, I've never seen a tournament this tight before, the next tournament is tighter. I have never in my life seen the guy from first place to 50th place has a chance to make the top 12 in this tournament. They are just pounds away. And as one fish, right now I think that Jacob Prosnick's got about 47 pounds, and Gerald Sporer's throwing a frog as well, and he's got 46 pounds. And Ishman Rowe's throwing a frog, and Ishman Rowe is like one of the frog kings, and he's got 45 pounds. And they're looking like 1, 2, 3 right now. So I think the higher that water comes up, the more that frog fishing is going to come into play because those fish don't have a choice but to go to the banks.
And, you know, I love it when they take a $60,000, $70,000 bass boat and they have to, use push poles and stuff like that to get way up in the back. As a matter of fact, I was surprised and I talked to Kevin Van Dam about this when he was here at the Classic. He keeps an expandable push pole in his Nitro boat at all times for situations like this.
Every single pro that I've ever ridden with has an expandable pole. And just to push up in there, and today is going to be where that pole, you know, comes into play because they are pushing up into areas that didn't exist this whole year and may never exist again. They're supposed to hit a 12-foot flood stage, which is going to put water way up into places water is not usually at, and is going to put those bass up into places they aren't usually at. And so I really kind of anticipated that. The first day was the first tournament I remember since being the chaplain. I've been doing this for 10 years. That it was raining when we blasted off. It was raining when they got back to weigh in. It rained all day the first day. And in addition to that extra water coming in, they're just headed to the banks. Bass are just headed to the banks. So that's why I think that Aaron Martins is probably going to have a tougher time. Because his fish are probably going to move on it because those, they set up on a certain water level. And as that water level gets higher and higher, they don't have a choice but to move in closer and closer. Now, so he's going to have to relocate his fish.
Is the spawn going up? I know that a lot of times you'll have the spawn take place late into June, or is it still kind of too late for the spawn up in that part of the country?
The largemouth, it's interesting because you got two things going on, and I got this from Jacob Prosnick, just listening to him on Bassmaster Live today. The largemouth have already spawned, and so they're in a post-spawn mood, and the smallmouth, ironically, haven't spawned yet. And so he said he's expecting the smallmouth spawn next week, And so I don't know why that is. I don't know why they would flip-flop like that. Normally, you know, smallmouth would spawn a lot sooner. So you've got fish in all kind of different stages. But I think they're here a little earlier than they've been before. You know, normally they come to La Crosse in the fall time of year, and it's just a total frog fest. But that frog is playing right now, and it is really – and it's a fun way to fish, but it's really a fun tournament to watch. If you get on Bassmaster Live and you're watching Jacob Prosnick push up into these areas and throw that frog into what I call deep, deep cabbage. It's just green junk and muck, and those bass will come up out of that stuff and explode on that frog, and it's an exciting way to fish. It's exciting to watch.
Now, are they catching smallmouth doing that with the frog? Because to me, a smallmouth is you go to a rock ledge somewhere and you take a little fly and you sit out there and twitch it. I can't imagine smallmouth being up in the jungle like that.
Right, and normally that would be the case. You're exactly right. Smallmouth will be sitting out on the river and looking for little slight current breaks out there. That's how Tommy Biffle won up here one time. But right now there's so much current flow in the main river, it's forcing those fish to get out of the current. And you know, despite popular belief, smallmouth will get up in that stuff sometimes. And sometimes you can catch them up on a topwater frog. I've actually done that in New Hampshire before, where they come up out of that stuff and get it. And so I think the current is the main factor that's forcing all those fish to go places they don't normally go.
Hey, man, this is Dieter. I'm the guest co-host this week. Not
hey,
a big
Dieter,
bass
welcome.
Fisherman, but I love watching bass fishing on TV. And what I'm curious about, I was looking at the weights here, and it looks like everybody about in the top 20 are within striking distance on of this thing. Who's a sleeper back in the field to keep an eye on going into the final days?
You're exactly right. And I tell you, I'm going to answer that in two ways. And one of the things, if you'll notice that Gary Klein is way up there, and Gary Klein is one of course, a legend in the sport of bass fishing. Lately, you know, as guys get older and stuff like that, you don't see those guys finishing as high, but Gary's doing great, and he's still an awesome fisherman, and really pulling for him. The guy that I really have always looked to see sleeper, whenever Clifford Perch is in that striking distance, you need to watch out for him. He's a guy that came from the Western Division, and he's won a lot of tournaments out west. A lot of guys in the East don't know him, but he is, and I'm going to tell you this, and this is going to be a strong statement, he's every bit as good as Aaron Martin with a drop shot, and he is coming on strong. He's hovering there around 12th place, 13th place right now, but he is one to look for. Cliff Prince from Florida is somebody who is a, you know, great angler. In the Florida fishing, he's used to seeing fish way up in the grass. And so, you know, he knows how to pull them out of that grass, and there's more and more grass happening. So if he gets up in the top 12, you know, I wouldn't count those two guys out as guys that are sleepers. Of course, Ott Defoe had the biggest bag of the tournament yesterday, and he's won here before. And he is undoubtedly, you know, one of the top fishermen in the world. And so those would be three guys I would look for to say, hey, you know, they could be sleepers. But Ish Monroe is coming up, and Ish Monroe knows how to fish a frog, and he's a power fisherman, doesn't like to use, you know, what he calls the fairy wands, the spinning rods. He likes to throw big braid, and he's good flipper, but when that frog bites on and Ish is up there, you better watch out for him as well.
And one of the names that's really not up there that you expect, if you're talking about jungle fishing, flipping, throwing frogs, would be Greg Hackney, who basically
right.
walked away last week. And I'm not even sure Greg's still in the top 100.
No, Greg had a bad first day. I think he only caught one fish the first day. I spoke with him at the boat ramp, and you know, he said he didn't catch him good. I had a little better second day, but he'd already kind of buried himself down. The problem is, you know, is that what happened, Philip, was this is turning into two separate tournaments. And when they first started, you know, the water was way down, and you could find those fish, you know, kind of set up in places. But now, as that water just drastically rises, they just have to go to the bank. And so that's what they're doing. All those fish are charging the bank, and it just pushes them more and more up into stuff. And these guys have never run up into that stuff before, so they're having to find new ways to get in there every single day. And so it's becoming a fascinating event to just see how far back they're going to have to go in order to find fish. And these guys will find what lives here, they will catch, I promise you.
And if you want to follow all the action, you can go to Bassmaster.com and check out Bass Track. And, Chris, where are we headed? We're going to North Dakota here pretty soon, aren't we?
That's right. I'm going to be leaving straight from Wisconsin and driving straight to North Dakota. And so it's going to be an amazing, you know, journey over there. And I really expect that lake to be one that is pretty phenomenal, because this is what I've heard so far from the pre-practice. I've heard the fish there are really stupid. They're really uneducated. They've never seen baits before. And so
kind of like ducks up there.
It ought to be a great, great, event to catch a lot of fish. So
now, is that next week, or we got a week break in between?
No, that's actually next week. They start practicing on Tuesday there, and it'll run Tuesday through the next Monday.
All right. And well, Chris Wells, we'll catch up with you next week, and that's the one where we're have to work something out on the cell phone coverage. Have to figure something out. Might have to have you climb to the top of the telephone pole.
That's exactly right. I'm going to be looking for some type of mountain, trying to get up there to find it, because I understand they have virtually no cell phone service out there. But some way, we will find a way to get that done.
Awesome. Chris Wells, the Bass Chaplain. Chris, great, great report, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Hey, thanks, guys. Y'all take care.
All right. So what do you think, man? Where would you catch catfish in that?
A lot of what they're doing, going up shallow like that. Yeah, it's the same for all fish. When you got rising water, the bite seems to be good. Fish start moving up in areas they don't normally get into, and then when that roof starts dropping, boom, it's like a light switch. So I was curious. Hopefully their water stays up for the rest of this event.
Awesome. Sight fishing, which is a topic that we're going to talk about when we come back after the break. Bed fishing, is it an ethical thing to do or not?
The Ethics of Bed Fishing on the Upstate's Talk Station, 106.3 WRD.
And when you go to our Facebook page at Upstate Outdoors WORD, like us. We've got a kind of a complex. We need more likes. We want everybody to like us. So, hey, one of the things that my guest co-host today, Dieter Melhorn, and I were talking about is the ethics of bed fishing. Now, most people will look at this. I got an article from Bassmaster.com talking about religion and politics, not the best topics for polite conversation. For bass fishermen, there's a third subject, and it's bed fishing. Mm. And we touched on this a little bit at the start of the show. You know, as, quote, sportsmen, we like to kill stuff when you've got your mind on the other. And I say this, we're bass fishing, you're not killing the fish.
Exactly.
And I want to say this, too, because I know Dieter is a big champion of catch and release. I mean, if you caught a 200-pound catfish, you would not kill that fish to mount it or nothing. You would release that fish as gently as possible.
I'd first get it weighed on a certified scale, but yeah, I would make every effort possible to get that fish back alive.
All right, what's your personal best?
61-ish, 2-ish, somewhere is right around there. Was Lake that, Monticello in South Carolina.
Was that off the bed sight fishing?
No, that was about 65 feet of water next to that standing standing timber down there.
Yeah. So is that something that you were talking about, how you got kind of ostracized on a couple of websites, catfishing websites, about catching catfish while they were on the bed?
Yeah, I actually put a video up on my YouTube channel, Dieter Melhorn Fishing, last week about fishing catfish beds. I have seen some stuff on my structure scan that look like big fanned out. They look like craters, and you can
brim beds on steroids.
Except they're like 3 feet across.
Yeah,
and we all know that bass spawn up on the banks. Crappiers same way. The only other big fish in the lake are carp, which we know carp. We always see carp running up in the grass in the springtime when they're in their spawning thing. So that leaves gar and catfish.
And you gar spawn on the surface.
Exactly. So yep. it's there's something big that is taking up, and during the peak of it, late May, you can see these craters is the best way to describe them. They're usually in at least 25 feet of water, and you see fish sitting in these things.
So it's not sight fishing per se with your eyes, but with your electronics.
It's totally electronics, and I don't think now, again, this is basically a hypothesis is what I've got is that that's what's in here. But in the video, I drug some areas, and I was doing it late. We're kind of on the backside of the spawn now. I saw some areas, had to come through them two times, but I caught a big male and a big female on two different passes in that general area. Now, was I catching them off the bed? I don't know, but there were some people online when I basically set it up that way that it's wrong. And, you know, the other thing in the catfish world is the noodling, grabbing fish.
Yeah, and those fish definitely are spawning.
Exactly. Those are, you know.
The big flatheads.
The flatheads, yeah, exactly. And that's definitely pulling them off the bed. You know, my thing is, it's kind of like with bass fishing. If you're going out there recreationally bass fishing, catching them, throw them back in, the fish swims back over there. A tournament now?
Yep.
You're going to catch them, throw them in a live well, and drive them 30 miles down the lake. You may be disrupting the whole process.
That bed's basically going to go to waste.
Exactly. So, and you know, in a big tournament, where you know, a Bassmaster FLW type tournament, you got a lot of boats during the right time of the year catching those fish and plucking them off and relocating. Does it have an effect? It's hard to say it doesn't, but you know, there's millions of fish out there. There's some ethical discussions.
Here's the thing about it that kind of brought it home to me is I have never heard of a brim tournament.
Right.
Okay. I don't know many people who, you know, try to fish for brim except when they're on the bed.
Yep.
And when they do, they go to load the cooler, to take back and clean a bunch of brim because brim are good eating.
Clean and kill every one of them.
Right. Yep. Okay. Now, here's the other thing. Is there a shortage of brim?
There's a lot of them.
I mean, I've not. Now, locally, let's say if you've got a farm pond or something, yeah, you can wear them out. What I see happens when somebody goes in and they clean out a brim bed is they're going to go to a different place or they're going to go deeper.
Yeah.
And those fish that spawn deeper where the people can't see the indentions like you're talking about, because most people are not that savvy to say, oh, look, on the electronics, there's the brim bed, and, you know, we're going to go over. Although we're there, we're getting there.
Yeah.
You know, with today's electronics. So, you know, kind of what's the big deal? I see one of the problems that I see talking about sight fishing or fish on the bed are – just what we talked about with Chris Wells with rising and lowering water levels,
yeah,
which is, you know, usually out of the hands of man. But, you know, a lot of these authorities, water authorities, you know, they'll say they try to bring the water up in the spring so that they can spawn. But, you know, I have heard and seen of some authorities that, well, we got to generate water. We got to take the water levels down while bass are on the beds.
Yeah. I, you know.
And then they're killing all of them.
What's the line from Jurassic Park? Nature will find a way to live or something
like
that. You know, these animals have been adapting to that in nature. I mean, it happens. We have droughts at the wrong time. We have floods at the wrong time. I think they're going to adapt to that, you know. My thing is, I'm curious, do we as anglers have enough impact? And I get that from the catfish guys all the time, is that, oh, they're killing too many with trot lines or bow fishing or whatever. You know, meanwhile, our catfish are getting bigger and bigger, and our tournament weights are getting, you know, higher and
higher. And we're getting smarter with people like me and you,
yeah,
who putting them out there in magazines, showing people how to catch them by You know, it used to be catfish, you go anchor out and you go throw out stink baits and
some dog food, some weenies.
Yeah, you bait them up a little bit, and now you're trolling for catfish. You're systematically dragging baits across the bottom where they can't hide, and you're, like you're talking about, the electronics.
Yep, it's a different world, and, you know, I think we will, if this little hypothesis is right, and some other people have seen it too, I think it will get more of a vertical, like, you know, like you would do drop shotting with, you know, bass.
For catfish?
Yeah, doing it for catfish. I really think that with electronics, I think within 10 years, we're going to be able to identify fish visually on
video
the sonar
fishing.
Of what exactly you've got down there fishing. And all this stuff, I you know, it's the thing about social media, it's a double-edged sword. You know, you see everybody's great accomplishments on there. And you kind of, if you're like me, you go, well, there's somebody, he called them. That means everybody's catching them except for me.
Yeah.
And sometimes things appear worse than they are. So, you know, are we having an impact? It's one of them things I think is going to take a little bit of time.
Awesome. Well, we're going to get our break for the top of the hour, and then when we come back, we're going to have the Roadkill Cafe, Dieter Mailhorn version.
Stay tuned, 106.3 WORD.